Coming up, we got Tom Haverstraw discussing a whole lot going on around the NBA, on the court, off the court, all the drama. We get into all of it. And then later, Tyler Rucker joins to talk about the NBA draft with another edition of Draft Class. That's all coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We got a good one today, and joining me as always every Thursday, Tom Haverstraw. Tom, how are you?
I'm good. Let's do it live, baby.
Hell yeah, man. I mean, we got a lot to discuss. We're going to talk about some game stuff, some drama happening, some big injury news, and the biggest news of the week, Jimmy Butler tore his ACL, Tom. Just terrible, devastating injury for the Golden State Warriors. They were finding themselves in recent weeks, winning a lot of games. Butler was playing his best basketball of the year as well. And now he's out for the next calendar year. This is not going to just impact the Warriors the remainder of this season, but also next season if they do decide to keep him. And, you know, this is just a massive loss. Steve Kerr mentioned after the game, Tom, how with Butler, his ability to get to the line, to get into the paint is near the best in the league. And it is. I mean, he statistically draws more fouls per shot than SGA and Denny Avdia. Butler is at the top of the league there. And so now they're going to miss that guy. And for Golden State this year, just this feels like just another year wasted of Stephen Curry's extended prime.
Yeah, really unfortunate. And if you're the Warriors, you really have to do a gut check here. Like, what do you want to do? How do you plot forward with Stephen Curry, 37 years old, and Draymond Green in his mid-30s? And then you look at the rest of the roster. They don't have kind of the adult in the room without Jimmy Butler. He did so much for them organizing the offense, getting efficient offense. I mean, their offense with Jimmy Butler, no Stephen Curry and Draymond Green on the floor, had an offensive rating of 122, Kevin. That would be a top five rate in the NBA. And that's without Steph on the floor, without Draymond on the floor. When he was anchoring that second unit and leading those bench guys, it was, you know, it was a playoff caliber team even without those two stars next to him. And so without Jimmy Butler, that floor drops dramatically. And so you're going to see games like the Toronto Raptors won a couple nights ago where they just look totally disorganized. They don't have anything together. And they gave up 145 points to the Raptors, the most that the Warriors had given up in over two decades. And so when you look at the way that he organizes them on both ends of the floor, he's a leader. He's playoff tested. He's a guy that, yes, he's up there in age, going to be 37 when he comes back from his ACL tear. But this really is for Steve Kerr, whose contract is up this offseason, for Mike Dunleavy Jr. and the GM, and for Joe Lacob. It's, what do you do now? Do you plot forward a path where Stephen Curry maximizes his championship window and you use that war chest of first-round picks? Or do you say, look, we've got no contracts beyond next season. Let's just run the clock out. Jimmy Butler comes back. One last hurrah with Draymond and Steph. And we just pack it up and go home and basically plan for a post-Steph, post-Draymond era. I think that would be a mistake and a disservice to the fan base that has stuck around through these Steph Curry years, the ups and downs, the championship years. And I think you got to owe it, Kev, to Stephen Curry to chase that fifth championship when he's still playing at an all NBA level. I think they continue to go for it and use those first round picks in the open market to fix what is, I think, not a playoff team without Jimmy Butler.
It is a slap in the face to the fans and to Stephen Curry if they don't go for it, in my opinion, Tom. I mean, look, Steph is still playing basketball at an all NBA level. He's still one of the 5 to 10 best players in the league, having one of the most efficient, high volume scoring seasons of his entire career. At age 37, Stephen Curry is still doing this. It's just truly remarkable. You can't take Stephen Curry for granted. And the Warriors, it feels like that they have been for a year plus, the way they've talked about, oh, we're not gonna you know, mortgage the future. We're not gonna go for it. We can't beat the Spurs. We can't beat the Thunder. We're not gonna be competing with them for titles, Steve Kerr said a few weeks ago before the Jimmy Butler injury. And I think, you know, ultimately, Tom, I mean, look, you're probably not going to compete with the Spurs in 3 years or the Thunder in 3 years, but you don't know how things will change. And the thing that bugged me about those Kerr comments a few weeks back, Tom, is the fact that Kerr knows better than anybody the challenges in going back to back. I mean, he did it with the Bulls as a player. He attempted it with the Warriors as a coach, and he saw them fail. He saw them succeed. He knows how tough it is, and the Thunder are dealing with injuries with Jalen Williams right now. Who knows if he'll ever get that hammy right? And so I think for the Warriors this year, that was before the Butler injury. After the Butler injury, things do change. And so I think there's three doors they can go through. Door number one, as you said, would be the worst choice. Change nothing. Continue doing what you're doing. Keep Jimmy Butler for the year. Keep Draymond and run it back in a year from now. And as Dunleavy said, Dunleavy had a quote before the game when he spoke. It wasn't just the Kuminga hot quote that he had. He also talked about Butler. Anthony Slater asked him, you know, a year ago, D'Anthony Melton tore his ACL. Is there any chance that now Butler could be traded? And of course, he's not going to say, yes, we're going to shop Jimmy Butler. But he did say, I don't envision that. But now that you've brought it up, I guess what I envision is his coming back next year and giving us a boost, just like he did last year, coming back and being the same guy he was. I mean, in his late 30s, after a year of recovery, maybe Butler comes back and he's a very high-level player still. But to be the same guy is not totally realistic, Tom. And ultimately, there's two other doors. They could tear it down. The Warriors could decide, let's rebuild. Let's ask Draymond, do you want to play home in Michigan? Do you want to play for the Pistons and be their Rasheed Wallace to put them over the top? Do you want to reunite with Mike Brown and the Knicks and fix their defense? Do you want to go somewhere? Steph, like, do you want to be part of us trying to get a lottery pick this year and continue here with us? I think these are real questions. But the flip side of it, Tom, is you said they're treasure trove of draft picks. They have the ability to trade three firsts unprotected and three swaps. And then they also have their 2030 first round draft pick, which is protected 20 to 31. It goes to the Wizards. They still keep the top 20 aspect of that. So they could trade that pick if it lands 1 to 20. They have the ability to essentially trade four firsts, three swaps. They have young guys. They have now a very tradable salary in Butler on top of Jonathan Kuminga. And so the third door is exploring Butler deals, Tom. And I think being aggressive and giving Stephen Curry a chance, to me, is the most appealing path forward, because they're still only three games back from a four seed in the Western Conference. They're only three games back, Tom. They're in it. They have a chance. There's something here with the Warriors, and I think it would be a mistake not to go for it.
They got to go for it, man. Like, I wrote for Yahoo Sports today. The article just came out about a few minutes ago, so go read it if you haven't. But I outlaid two trade ideas that I really like for the Warriors. One is Zion Williamson and Trey Murphy III. You're basically going to the New Orleans Pelicans and saying, look, we have all of these first round picks. We have a 2026 that we can put into a deal, which, by the way, you guys don't have a 2026 pick, which seems crazy to think that the New Orleans Pelicans, as bad as they are, they won't even be able to have the upside of being bad because they traded it last year in June. So they have the ability to give New Orleans a first round pick. They have the ability to trade Jonathan Kuminga, who is in the same timeline as Jeremiah Fears and Derek Queen. And you also have the ability to get off of Zion Williamson's contract. So the structure would be Jimmy Butler, Jonathan Kuminga going to the New Orleans Pelicans for Zion Williamson and Trey Murphy III. You also bring back Kevon Looney as a nice heartwarming, nostalgic bring back Loon Dog to the Bay. And essentially you bring in a third team to help facilitate the deal. But you send New Orleans a batch of those first round picks. And we heard from Mike Dunleavy Jr. earlier say, hey, look, we're not going to trade one of those later first round picks when Steph Curry is not here, unless we're getting a guy who's going to be a legit big high impact player for us when that pick hits. In other words, we need a guy like Trey Murphy or Zion Williamson in order to make that pick without Steph Curry and Draymond around not to be a lotto pick or a top five pick. So this trade right here, Kev, the particulars are there on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. Of course, this is a trade that we would have to see whether the Nets would oblige, but or whether Mike Dunleavy Jr. would oblige. And Joe Dumars, he has said, according to Chris Haynes saying, they're not interested in moving any of their core guys. I don't believe that. I think that might be posturing. I'll believe it when I see it.
It is posturing, for sure, 100%.
Right. And so I feel like they would be open to the right deal. It would be very bizarre for Joe Dumars to basically close off any sort of deal that would be on the table for Zion Williamson, especially because, look, he's healthy right now. He left last night's game with an illness, but he's healthy. And this is the time to sell high on Zion Williamson, because who knows what will happen in the next couple weeks. And I think the Golden State Warriors, that's a high upside move. And if you're the Warriors, look, man, you're looking at a year without Jimmy Butler, and we have never seen a player his age come back from an ACL injury. It's the second oldest player to suffer an ACL injury since 2005, according to Jeff Stotts' database of InStreetClothes.com. Birdman, wow. Chris Anderson had a age 38 ACL tear with the Cavs back in 2016, never played again. But then again, Jimmy Butler is not Birdman, right? Like, they're not the same caliber of player. And we've heard from Jimmy Butler saying on Instagram, "I'll be back before you know it." The question is, what condition will he be back mid-season without training camp? I think the Golden State Warriors should make a deal at the trade deadline, take a big swing, because Mike Dunleavy Jr. has the draft picks to get it done. And he has a giant contract that turns into an expiring deal next year in Jimmy Butler. And I think there are teams that could be in the market for that. And New Orleans is at the top of my list.
Absolutely, Tom. I mean, ultimately, like, you're hitting the point here with the Warriors. They can talk all they want about, yeah, we're not going to trade Jimmy. And like, Dunleavy played with Jimmy. I'm sure they have a great relationship, and I'm sure he'd love to keep Jimmy. But he's 37 years old. He's, like you said, second oldest player to tear his ACL. And we're talking about a guy that is so heavily reliant on getting to the basket, drawing fouls. And I think, like, what Kerr talked about with how important that is to the team, it was exactly what they needed. It provided variety to Steph's perimeter-based game. It was a perfect complement. But the fact is, he drew a foul on 29% of his drives to the rim, 26% of his isolations, 21% of his pick and rolls, all higher than SGA, just to put it into perspective. And, like, you can't guarantee that Butler's going to have the same burst off the dribble when he comes back from a torn ACL, especially year one of recovery. A lot of guys in year one, they're not quite the same. And so, you know, it's like the same thing with any player comes back from injury. Kyrie, if he comes back mid-year, is he going to be anywhere near the same as we saw pre-injury? Probably not. When Tatum comes back from his torn Achilles later this year, is he going to be 100%? No. You're hoping for 75, 80% of his production. And for an older Warriors team, Steph another year older, Draymond another year older, both of them have also dealt with their inconsistencies and injuries as well. And who knows what can happen as you age. I just don't think Butler makes sense. I like your idea of a Zion, Trey Murphy type of thing, because Zion offers a big swing upside. He's almost kind of like a first-round draft pick in that sense, because it's like, you don't know what you're going to get. Maybe he stays healthy for the remainder of his career. You don't know. And then Trey Murphy does offer certainty. He can fit now in the short term, and he can fit later as well. And ultimately, that's what I think that this opens up for Golden State, because prior to this, Tom, the conversation was, well, if you're going to go for Anthony Davis, you'd have to give up Draymond with Kuminga. It was Draymond plus Kuminga to get there financially for a guy like AD or for Lauri Markkanen. The Giannis stream, all that stuff would have had to require you to trade Draymond Green. Now you can keep Draymond in all of these scenarios. Hell, you could keep you could keep Kuminga in all of these scenarios. I'm sure Joe Lacob would love that as well. And you can instead trade Butler. And that's where I think this opens up a very unique door that wasn't there prior, Tom. And I think with Kuminga, it also opens up the fact that he's going to play now. He had 20 points in 21 minutes the other night against the Raptors. And, you know, Joe Lacob is there on the sidelines, cheering him on, looking really excited. And, you know, I think this is an opportunity to showcase him and possibly raise his value. You could send Kuminga to one team and then Butler to another team, and then suddenly have a really, really strong, deep roster, better built around Steph. Like, that's, I'd be trying to be really creative here if I'm the Warriors with this situation, this hand I've been dealt.
Well, what if you just traded them both to the same location of a team that wants to get off long-term money, that is kind of in a rebuild and retool pivot situation, like the Dallas Mavericks? We have heard from Anthony Slater's.
No, Tom. For AD?
Listen, Who are you going to get to fill Jimmy Butler's shoes as a guy who's going to get a ton of fouls, raise your floor, play two-way basketball in the upside? You're not going to be able to get a super-duper star right now if you're the Warriors. I don't think they can get Giannis Antetokounmpo right now if you're the Warriors. Even if you put all of those picks in, I don't think you're going to be able to swing that. So who are the list of stars around the league, championship medal, guys who have been able to play with Stephen Curry on Team USA or played with under Steve Kerr as the coach of Team USA? It's a very short list. You look around the league, guys just are not available who have that many boxes checked. And so AD, as injury-riddled as he is, and I've been hammering this point all along, but when you're backed into a corner with no recourse and Jimmy Butler being out for an ACL injury, I think you have to kind of raise your tolerance level of the risk. And so AD, at his contract, it's another year of money that the Dallas Mavericks have to owe him. And so you bring this opportunity to the Mavericks and say, look, you don't have to commit to AD's 3 years left on his deal. He wants a contract extension. You guys have cold feet on that. We get it. So how about we trade you Jimmy Butler and as an expiring deal next year, and you get Jonathan Kuminga, who Anthony Slater reported was one of two teams, among others, apparently, that were interested in Jonathan Kuminga, the other being the Sacramento Kings. So the deal that I'm proposing here, Kev, and you can knock it all you want, but I'm trying to think of, like, what do you do if you're the Warriors to get to maximize this AD title window for Steph? AD.
He doesn't play, Tom. He doesn't play.
I forgot the best part. Hold on, Kev. The best part is that they get Klay Thompson back in a reunion back to the Bay, and you get the floor spacing that you would need next to Draymond and AD. So you're out on this idea. I actually think actually kind of intriguing.
I'm way out. AD doesn't play. He doesn't play.
You know who definitely doesn't play is Jimmy Butler for the next 12 months, Kev.
I'd rather wait. I'd rather wait till the summer than trade for AD now if I'm Golden State. I think they should be angling for Giannis. I think Steph should be in Giannis's phone right now, ask for the trade. I think Dunleavy should be calling John Horst and making offers for Giannis right now. I'd rather go for Lauri Markkanen from the Jazz. I understand the mindset of not wanting to give up those future picks when Steph is someday gone. If you win six championships or you're in three more finals and you win one more and he gets five rings, whatever it is, you got an opportunity here. And to me, AD is just, he in theory helps you, but I don't like the deal. I would not go for AD. I think their picks are far more valuable, giving them the option to at least go for a Markkanen or go for a Giannis. Go for Michael Porter Jr. Go for Trey Murphy. Mm-hmm. AD, I would be an anti-AD acquisition for the Golden State Warriors. And ultimately, though, Tom, I do think the logic of it should at least be explored. It makes a hell of a lot more sense to get AD if it's for injured Jimmy Butler than it did for Draymond Green and for Jonathan Kuminga. That did not make any sense. This makes more sense than that. But I still would rather go in a bunch of other different directions.
All right, so you're saying go after Lauri Markkanen, go after Giannis. If they both get rebuffed, then what? You just wait until next year
I'd go for the
draft. You can trade the draft pick at draft night, and then Jimmy Butler is literally an expiring contract at that point. So you might see, and this is one of the paths that I wrote about, is just kick the can to this summer and reevaluate this summer. So things can change. A lot of calculus around the league can change this offseason. And I do think that expiring contract for Jimmy Butler, $57 million, looks a lot more appealing to a team trying to get offload long-term money this summer. So to your point, I would 1,000% dream scenario go after Markkanen and Giannis. And you're right. Getting AD now or Zion and Trey Murphy, is the opportunity cost is you're probably out on the Giannis sweepstakes if it ever comes to that. So there is a downside that is kind of subtle, is that if you get one of those stars, you're basically saying, we're not in the Giannis the Giannis sweepstakes. We're taking ourselves out of it by getting a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. We're getting one of these stars right now as we can. But as you said, AD is not even a bird in the hand. He's a bird without a wing. He's got a hand injury. He's not able to play for the next month plus. And so even if you do acquire AD, you're basically looking at him maybe coming back for the playoffs and maybe integrating, you know, for a deep playoff run. But that's a big if. So I could see why you might hold off and wait until this summer. But again, things can change. As we see in the NBA, devastating injuries can happen. And it's just the longer that you wait, the window, the championship chase for Stephen Curry and Draymond Green, it could be closing before we know it.
Absolutely, especially with the guys at the age that they are. Later in the show, I'm going to deliver five NBA teams that must make a trade to you, Tom. And maybe Giannis will be involved in that conversation later. Right now, though, let's talk about Victor Wembanyama, because Kevin Durant had some interesting comments about KD after the Rockets really shut him down in their win over the Spurs the other night. Wemby took 21 shots. 13 of them were jumpers. He missed 8 of those. And KD, after the game, said how Wemby's still working on his shot. We forced him to take tough fadeaway shots. He's more dangerous at the rim. There's a lot more to his game than floating around the perimeter. Those are KD's words after the game. And I think it's interesting, Tom, because you look at Wemby this year, he's shooting a career best from mid-range, 38.3%. Not a great number, but it's higher than what he did last year at 33.3%, higher than what he did as a rookie at 26.8%. Those are dribble jumpers off from the mid-range. And then from three-point range, he's been slightly worse than he was in the past. 23.5% on dribble jumper threes this year, down from 32.8% last year, down from 37.7% as a rookie. So, you know, better from mid-range, worse from three. When you put them all together, the three-pointers and the mid-range jumpers all together, 33.5% this year, slightly up from 33% as last year, 33% as a rookie. And so he stayed pretty flat if you look at all of his dribble jumpers outside of the paint. And with Victor Wembanyama, he kind of has to shoot a lot considering the lack of other shooters on the roster. And I do wonder, is this something we'll see a heck of a lot more often with teams trying to force Wemby to be a shooter as much as possible? But also, Tom, Victor wants to be a shooter. Sometimes this is just the way he plays. Do you think Wemby should be listening to some of that slight criticism that we're hearing from KD about Wemby's game?
What I heard from KD there was a veteran telling a young player, "You're not me, bro. You're not me. Like you're Victor Wembanyama. You're Big Vic. Go play like Big Vic." And KD is like the greatest mid-range pull-up shooter we have ever seen. He can get to his spots no matter where it is, and he can shoot at basically a layup for him. Those fadeaway jumpers, the mid-range jumpers, the hezzies. These are things that are layups for him. He's shooting 56%. On long twos this, or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's at 56%, KD's at 52% on mid-ranges off the dribble. Like you said, Wemby's not even in the same stratosphere. And when you look at the fact that he's on two-point field goal percentage off the dribble, there's 85 players that have at least 50 of those shots this season, and he ranks 84th in efficiency on those shots. And when you're looking at Victor Wembanyama, the ability to play like KD, sure, he looks up to KD. He's been comped to KD quite a bit. But I have seen this from Wemby quite a bit, Kev, is that he sometimes gets emotional going into these games, it seems like, where he wants to, you know, show, you know, to Chet Holmgren, "I am going to dunk on you every single time down the floor. I want to show you I'm better at the things that you do on the floor. I'm going to block everything at the rim against you, Chet, because I want to prove it to you." Same thing with KD in this game. KD was like, "Yeah, some of those mid-range shots, we were kind of got a hand up on them, and there were some ugly misses in there." And there were. It was banked off the backboard. There were air balls. And it was almost like they were tempting. They're setting up a trap for Wemby because they knew that he wanted to play like KD and show KD that he's just as good as him out on the floor at some of the things that KD does. But to me, it was a nice way of KD saying, "Look, man, there's only one me, and you're not going to be like me out there. And I appreciate the honor of you trying to play like me, but Wemby, you're 7'7", bro. Get down to the paint and cook in the paint." And I just think that is a lesson that as a guy as young as Wemby is, it's something he should take. It's really cool that KD is offering this kind of advice to him. And I do think it's something that he should embrace, is the idea of not trying to be like anybody else, be like you. And you don't have to model yourself every step of the way as KD.
I mean, on that point, Tom, I mean, I think also, like, if he is going to shoot more catch and shoot threes would be nice. This year, he's making 46% of his catch and shoot threes, but he's taking only three per game. That's less than half, or it is half, of the six that he took last year per game. He took six catch and shoot threes per game last year at 37%, which was up from 29% as a rookie. And I think ultimately, he's got to get to the rim more often, though, more than anything else. 99 players this year have taken at least 100 shots in the restricted area. Wemby's number one of those 99 players, making 82% of those shots. Tom, where do you think he ranks in the restricted area for attempts per game of those 99 players?
I'm going to go with 46.
49th. Boy, that's close. Wow. You're good. Price is right. Come on down. 3.6 per game. He takes 3.6 shots in the restricted area per game. Some players that take more: Norm Powell, 3.7. Marvin Bagley, 3.9. Kata with Boston, 4.4. Mobley, 4.7. Markkanen, a shooter, 5 per game. And Giannis leads the NBA with 8.3 shots in the restricted area per game. The Spurs need to get him to the rim more, Tom. It's as simple. How is the number not 6 or 7 or 8 for this guy who's so dominant as a ball handler and as a lob threat and as a guy that can just stand down there? You saw some of those clips on screen if you're watching on YouTube. They just throw it up to him and he puts it down. They got to design more plays and put him in positions to be at the rim more often. That is their most efficient half-court possession, is Wemby in the restricted area.
Yeah, I mean, he's just turned 22, so maybe he learns this as he gets older. But if I'm going to model my game off of somebody, if I'm Wemby, it's Giannis. The guy you're talking about is at the number one spot on that list in terms of field goal attempts, and a lot of those are unassisted. He's able to get to the cup off the dribble in ways that Wemby, I think, can do the same thing. And look, last year, it was kind of an abomination how often he was taking those three-pointers. He was trying to show that he's not just a around-the-basket player and taking threes at a reckless rate, in my opinion. But now when you're looking at Wemby, it's like he's trying to figure out who he is as a scorer, as a player. And the reason why he's at 80%, I would argue, is because a lot of those are teed up for him from teammates. And so maybe for him, it's like, all right, if they can get me these lobs and putbacks around the rim, like easy baskets around the rim, and I can shoot 80%, I'll do that. But if it means I have to take guys off to the dribble, which is a lot harder, which, you know, ask Giannis, ask Julius Randle, Denny Avdija, you take a beating when you play that kind of bruising basketball, when you get downhill and refuse to get stopped at the rim. That's what it's going to take. And at 22 years old, Kev, my thinking is, maybe we just got to remember he's still a senior in high school, senior in college, the same age essentially as a senior in college. So maybe this is just a growing pain for him, is understanding, look, man, watch Giannis tape and how he gets to the cup relentlessly. That's who you're going to be in your prime, not Kevin Durant.
I think that's spot on, Tom. And that's the thing. Like, we're talking about some of the things Wemby can do. He's still just in year three of his career. And ultimately, I think how special he already is, this is just a sign of what he could be come prime years. As he does continue to get stronger, as he does continue to find himself as a player. And ultimately, where he already is still one of the best players in the world. Where he could be at some point is pretty scary to think about. If he's getting to the rim 6, 7, 8 times per game, like Giannis numbers, like Amen Thompson numbers, where it's something that they go for, that they're designing plays, that they have an objective in their mind that they're going for. And if the three-point shot continues to improve over time off the dribble, and if the mid-ranger improves as well, which I think it will, Tom. I think in time, Wemby will become a better shooter. Never KD. There's only one KD. But I do think Wemby's shooting will continue improving over the years to come. So that's some straight basketball talk. There's also a lot of drama to talk about. We're going to kind of alternate a little bit until we get to our five teams that need to make a trade. The Lakers drama. There was a lot this week, Tom, not just on the court. First, it was on the court with the Lakers going through some issues. I talked about that with Jason Timpf on Monday. Now it's off court. Baxter Holmes over at ESPN spoke with current and former Lakers staffers. I'll give you a little recap here if you didn't read the story, where there's a lot of stuff about the sale. Jeannie Buss fired her siblings. They believe that she was behind their firings. There was a coup attempt by Johnny and Jim Buss at one point. Jerry Buss had once promised his ex-wife Joanne that she'd never have children, or he'd have never have children with anybody else besides her. He broke that promise after their divorce, and he had Joey and Jesse Buss, two sons. Joanne told this to Jeannie Buss in her late years, and Jeannie was not happy about it. She told Jesse in the story that he never should have been born. Jeannie turned against Jerry West, according to people in the story, told to Baxter, turned on her brother, and even turned on LeBron James. According to Baxter Holmes, she felt that LeBron had a outsized ego. There was overt control through Clutch Sports. He didn't take accountability for the Russell Westbrook decision. She felt that LeBron wasn't grateful for the Lakers drafting Bronny James. And Jeannie did release a statement through Sam Amick over at The Athletic, where she said, "It's really not right, given all the great things LeBron has done for the Lakers, that he has to be pulled into my family drama. To say that it wasn't appreciated is just not true and completely unfair to him." And ultimately, Tom, I mean, this feels like Succession. Like, there should be a TV show about the last 15 years. Like there should be a show where Buss dies. Like, it starts with him on his deathbed and the family's together, and everything that happens after that. That's what the show should be.
That's exactly what I was thinking, is Showtime Succession. That's what this was. I kept reading this, and shouts to Baxter Holmes. When we worked together at ESPN, we would have this saying that you always strive to write the story that is scorched earth, meaning you write a story that no one else can write about that topic anymore, because you just nailed everything and you just went scorched earth on the story. And as I'm reading this story on ESPN.com, I was thinking of Baxter telling me, you know, he went scorched earth on this story. Yeah, just incredible reporting, the scenes in it, the family intrigue, the palace intrigue. It read like a script from Succession. But this is real stuff. I mean, I've got three siblings. It's not perfect. It's not all roses and rainbows all the time. And there are disagreements. And to have it played out in public like this, the phone call where Jeannie Buss is alleged to have told her brother, "You should not have been born," is one of the coldest, most just inhumane things I can remember coming out of an NBA story. And sure, you can say some hateful things or things, you can get emotional around your siblings, but to have this get played out in public is an absolute bruising blow for the Buss family, the image and the reputation for Jeannie Buss. And some of the details in this story, it just made me feel like this is our cartoon. Like, some of it just seems so crazy to me that this is real life. Like, the detail that Baxter included about how the payouts, the financial payouts for the Rambis couple, Linda Rambis and Kurt Rambis, and the other executives who negotiated the sale, allegedly the payouts were $8 million each and $24 million each, which was a nod to Kobe Bryant, which to me is just kind of sickening in a way. Just the idea that you would make these business decisions and have this kind of numerology, religious nod to Kobe Bryant. It just felt so creepy to me. And like, I know people who are Lakers fans are looking at this like, yeah, you know, like it's Kobe. But to me as an outsider, it's just strange. Like, a lot of this seems strange. And it does, like the Luka trade and how it seemed to be blindsiding Clutch Sports, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Rich Paul. In the context of this story that Jeannie Buss felt threatened by Rich Paul and Clutch Sports and LeBron and the kind of alliance that they had been growing power within the Lakers, it kind of makes sense why she was willing to make this deal for Luka Doncic, who is not repped by Clutch, who is not repped by one of Anthony Davis or LeBron James's agents. It's a totally different power structure. And I do think that it was deliberate that she was able to strike this deal with Rob Pelinka, who used to represent Kobe Bryant. Again, a lot of the Kobe Bryant stuff playing out in this story. And I do think that this, Kevin, is illustrative of how the NBA is so much fun to cover because there's so much unnecessary drama, man. Like when I'm reading this, I'm like, is this fiction or nonfiction? And Baxter is as ironclad, Loctite reporting as you'll find in the industry. So when you read this, he's got well-sourced reporting behind it, people on the record talking about it. And I just hope that Will Ferrell, Adam McKay, John C. Reilly, they all come together one last time. Well, Will Ferrell and Adam McKay were behind Succession, executive producers for Succession. Yep. And there is kind of a weird fallout on the Winning Time show with John C. Reilly playing Jerry Buss. I feel like we should get them together and have kind of the sequel here for this. Right, Kev? We got to get them together. Get the family back together one last time for the Showtime Succession story.
I mean, I think this would be a hit, more so than the other one that got canceled, because that went too far to the past. This is very contemporary. There's just so many Succession wrinkles in this story. It felt like I was sitting on the toilet reading the story, Tom. I didn't get up for a long while.
No, it was just so good.
It was just so good. I just couldn't stop reading.
Go see your doctor, man. Like, that was a long story, dude. That was a really long story.
I was done. I was done for a while. I just didn't want to move. I was just so into it. It was such a great story. Please.
Yeah.
Tom,
We've all been there. I've got a couple kids. I'm not weirded out by, you know, that kind of stuff. But man, I did not see that coming. Kev, but
everybody poops.
It is true, everybody poops, but the fact that you finished this story on the toilet, that's like a 5,000 word story, dude. So look, you finished up, whatever, but I'm finished with the idea that this Lakers story with LeBron is over. Like imagine LeBron reading this, and the fact that that Rob Pelinka and the Rambis family, they got these payouts from Jeannie Buss, secret payouts that the other siblings didn't have. And you talk about LeBron and what his legacy is. It's family, right? Like, it's family. LeBron, more than any other superstar that we've seen come through the NBA, is all about family. And so I wonder how this lands.
Is that his legacy? Wait, LeBron family legacy? I don't know about that. I mean, how many times
did he not demand to have his son drafted by the Lakers?
Yeah, it's a nice chapter of his story. But when I think about LeBron James 20 years from now, I'm not going to think about family guy. I'm going to think, he's a mercenary who went to a bunch of different teams and won everywhere over multiple decades. And he played long enough for his son to play too.
Sure. But I do think that a big part of his story, I should say, a big part, not the only thing that he's known for, is the main thing legacy-wise, is, you know, just this is so, like, I think that this is just the beginning, you know? Like, we're going to have some more fallout from this story, and I got to imagine Baxter's going to be all over it.
I think there's a real possibility of that, too. It feels like every time there's a story like this involving LeBron, something bigger follows. And considering the state of the team there with Rich Paul, as we talked about last week, talking about they should trade Austin Reeves, it's all clearly coming from a standpoint of like, hey, we need to find LeBron a reason to stay here. I think there's going to be more to come, whether it's ahead of the deadline or probably not till the summer. But this Lakers drama isn't going away, especially with the team being very much up and down as of late. And we'll be right back after this break. The Knicks, they've been in the news a lot for their losses. They lost four in a row to the Kings, the Warriors, the Suns, and the Mavericks, and then they just shellacked the Brooklyn Nets on Wednesday night, held them to 66 points, Tom. 66 points for the sad Brooklyn Nets. I was talking to somebody earlier in the day. I was like, well, what if the Knicks come out and lose tonight to the Brooklyn? Can you imagine how loud the uproar would be if that happens? Well, they didn't. They ended up taking care of business and beat Brooklyn. But I don't think it's going to change the conversation. Knicks fans in my life still are all very panicked, wondering what this team is going to do, what they should do. What comes to mind to you first, Tom? Is it a cat deal? Is it something else? Do they even need to make a trade? What's wrong with the Knicks and what should they do about it?
So some numbers on that game last night. So before that game, in the month of January, the New York Knicks ranked 26th in the NBA defensive rating. And now, in the month of January, they're 15th. They go from 26th of January to 15th. One night game. In the NBA. One game.
That's so funny.
And like when you look at the way that they were able to defend from the beginning, it wasn't even like a route from the beginning. It actually... the Nets were actually winning for a little bit of this game, and then the Knicks took off. But what's interesting is Jordan Clarkson's basically removed from the rotation, and Deuce McBride and Landry Shamet have taken those minutes from Jordan Clarkson, who seemed to be a really big fixture off the bench, second unit, anchoring that second unit a lot of the times when Deuce was out this year. But he's gone from the rotation. He only played garbage time minutes in this one. So they're trusting Shamet. Now that he's healthy, to lead that second unit with Deuce. And Karl Anthony Towns, it's okay against, like, I'm okay with it being against the Brooklyn Nets, but I really need to see it against the Philadelphia 76ers on Saturday. They got some time off before this big ABC matchup, Atlantic Division blockbuster here between these two teams, Philly and New York going at it on Saturday afternoon. That's when I feel like we can really evaluate whether this Jalen Brunson-led players-only meeting actually meant something. It was good to see, certainly. But I need to see it from Kat, who has been kind of in a funk all season long. We talked about it yesterday on the Big Number Pod. Is just Mike Brown, when he came in, it seemed like Karl Anthony Towns went out of his way to not feel confidence or imbue confidence in Mike Brown's offensive philosophy, like preseason at a press conference saying, I honestly don't know what the offense is going to be like. I don't know what my role is going to be. It seemed like a slap in the face to me. It's usually when you have a star player, have a new head coach, they all get in line and with the front office and with the ownership group. And it's always nice to say like, yeah, I'm excited to play for Mike Brown. Really interesting sets that we're running. Really excited. And we stand by the front office and how they're making decisions. And I'm excited to get the season started. It's not what Karl Anthony Towns said. I think he was setting the tone this season that he wasn't happy about his role and the touches that he was getting, and you're seeing his scoring output go down and his defensive activity go down. And I just wonder if we do see the Knicks struggle again against the 76ers on national television at Philly, whether we'll see Karl Anthony Towns be continued in this funk. Because it's one thing to do it against the Brooklyn Nets that are bottom five in the league. It's another thing to do it against the Philadelphia 76ers on national TV.
100%, Tom. I mean, ultimately for the Knicks, it's just you make some moves that you feel like made sense. You trade a lot for Bridges. Well, you're expecting him to tap back into being an all-defensive player. Didn't happen. I mean, he's not the same defender as he was in Phoenix. You expect to trade for Kat, and you hope you can put him next to Mitchell Robinson and play with two bigs, but you really can't do that, considering some of the other non-shooters on the team. You signed Gershon Yabusele after he had a great comeback year with the Sixers, and he's 340 pounds. It's just, you know, you get these guys and they don't work out. And ultimately for the Knicks, I mean, they have to try to flip Yabu, that $7 million salary. I'd explore trading Bridges over like OG personally. I think Bridges is the guy that I would try to move for what? I don't know exactly. Considering the position the Knicks are in, I think they need to find another big out there. I would love for them to do that. Because just to be able to play two bigs more often. But the issue is then do you have enough shooting on the team? They want to play fast. They want to play with motion. It's a tough position for the Knicks. And it's just crazy, Tom. We're talking about this today when a month ago they're coming off the NBA Cup and they feel like the favorite in the Eastern Conference. It really is a curse. That's what it's becoming. It's becoming a curse to win the NBA Cup.
Man, a brutal run after the Knicks after winning the cup. And also, I mean, do you say blame it on the cup or do you blame it on James Dolan with the quotes that he had right after the cup? Not raising the banner. Raising the banner.
Some NBA karma. Yeah, not raising the banner. Yeah, I think that could be it too. I think the Knicks should make a trade, but I haven't quite put my finger on what trade yet, which is why they're not part of our next exercise here. Five NBA teams that must make a trade. And Tom, I want to start off with our five NBA teams that must make a trade with the Orlando Magic. The Magic got to add shooters. They have to add shooters this year. They're in a position where this offense is still sputtering even after adding Desmond Bane and Tyus Jones this offseason. They're 18th in offensive rating. That's up from 27th last year. But the gains from three-point range, they were 23rd in the NBA in three-point attempts last year. They're 25th this year. They were 30th in the NBA in three-point percentage last year. They're 29th this year. Orlando has to add a shooter, and they have different types of contracts at different tiers where they can do it. They have Jet Howard, $5.5 million. They have Tyus Jones, $7 million expiring. Jonathan Isaac's making $15 million. They don't have a lot of value they can put into deals, though. They have a swap in 27 and 31. They can trade their 32 first outright as well. But they got to find some shooters out there. The question on my mind lately, though, Tom, is there's good things happening in Orlando. Anthony Black looks like he's taking a big, big, big leap on the floor. And that's while Jalen Suggs is out. Is Jalen Suggs actually the guy they should be trying to flip as their highest value tradable piece? $35 million this year declines to $26.7 with a team option for the 2029-30 season. Orlando, I think, should be putting Suggs into that, let's explore trades idea and try to figure out this roster around Franz and Paolo. What do you think?
I think Paolo's the guy. I think you trade him for Michael Porter Jr. and get it.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
I think that's it. You want shooting? Wow. Go get Michael Porter Jr. for this team, and you're going to be, in my opinion, a much better team. I think the addition of a guy
that is a hot trade. Wow.
Yeah. Well, guess what? Like, we've seen a couple years now is like the ceiling for the Franz and Paolo Banchero, the partnership. It's only so high. They don't make each other better. Paolo's not a shooter. He's an inefficient guy who isn't a playmaker that makes others around him better, but he's still a star. And so for the Brooklyn Nets, you basically turn Cam Johnson into a potential franchise cornerstone in Paolo Banchero. Maybe a change of scenery will get him to be a little bit more efficient. But I love Michael Porter Jr. for just about any team trying to get more, add more shooting and play at a high level, like play deep playoff runs. Michael Porter Jr. is the guy. And so I feel like Paolo Banchero, you build around Franz Wagner, you add Michael Porter Jr., and I would say that team's a 50-55 win team in the Eastern Conference. As rather right now, I think they top out at a 45-50 win ceiling with Paolo and Franz.
Now, look, I mean, trading Paolo in a deal for MPJ, I have a feeling that could possibly be the best package out there for Brooklyn in terms of a player on the table, as you're outlining. Boy, I mean, I wouldn't want to give up on Paolo this early, but at the same time, Tom, like he has his flaws that haven't improved in year four, and this is before the max kicks in. So it might actually be the best time to do it if you're Orlando. Is MPJ the right guy? I'd maybe rather try to angle like with New Orleans, like a Trey Murphy and other pieces type of thing. But I'm not against trading Paolo. I like the idea. I mean, I feel like you're thinking even bigger than I am by trying to trade Paolo. You're thinking really big there. And I'm thinking about like, oh, go for this role player. Go for that role player with Jet Howard and Jonathan Isaac and all that. Why not do both, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can. I think you're right, is that they need more shooting. At the point guard position has always been tough. And without Jalen Suggs, a lot of those warts are showing a lot more. I just believe so much in Franz Wagner and the way that Desmond Bane and he can have chemistry together as shooters, as dynamic players. And Franz is not... he's not Michael Porter Jr. out there as a shooter. And Paolo has been really struggling to find his form as a jump shooter. And a lot of those mid-range Jays, he doesn't have a dynamic offensive threat. And I feel like a lot of his game is just getting to the free throw line and just be bulldozing his way to the rim. But we've seen guys who are able to develop a 3-point shot 4 years into the league, and we just haven't seen it. I'm covering Danny Avdia in Portland, and the ability to be a 3-point threat changes everything for him when he gets downhill attacking. It makes him an all-NBA player, and Paolo's just been kind of stuck as this borderline all-star, and I feel like if we're not seeing it now, I don't know when we're going to see it. And maybe a change of scenery going to a team like Brooklyn, where they would invest in him to be the franchise cornerstone. Maybe that's the move that unlocks him. But to me, I just feel like he lowers the ceiling in ways for the Orlando Magic. I would almost want to see what this team could be with a Michael Porter Jr. in that place.
Well, as Will said in the chat, the Nets would probably do that in a heartbeat, flipping MPJ for Paolo Banchero. Maybe. I think it might be a bigger discussion than you think. TR the Star in chat says, talk only about the Bulls. Well, I do have a Bulls idea coming up next, Tom. Number two of five NBA teams that must make a trade, the Bulls. The Bulls got a tank, Tom. They can't just have this play-in residency year in, year out. They're 21-22 on the year. They're only 4.5 games back from the Raptors for the 4 seed. There's a world in which they accidentally climb up the standings and then they just get shellacked in the first round of the playoffs and get nothing but like the 18th, 19th pick or whatever. But they're only 3 up on the Bucks to miss the play-in. It's pretty obvious in this year's draft class, with so many superstar potential players, AJ DiMonza, Cam Boozer, and of course Darren Peterson at Kansas, never mind all the other guys behind him, Caleb Wilson having a big year for North Carolina this year as well. He looks like the number 4 pick. They have to find a way to fall out of the play-in. And so to me, the number one most obvious path is to trade Nikola Vucevic. This year, Vooch, Jalen Smith, or both of them have been on the floor for 88% of the team's minutes. They have a minus 13.2 net rating in the minutes without either of them. The Bulls need to find a way to get more of those minutes without Vooch or Jalen Smith. So trade Vooch or buy him out for that matter. And Zach Collins comes back eventually. The Spurs once used Zach Collins to tank a season. Let's try to get in the lottery for once, Chicago. Let's get in the lottery, especially this year, Tom.
Pull the plug is what you're saying. Pull the plug. I mean, feel like the
play whatever tournament it takes. Should be... Trade White, too. Trade anybody. Just get in the lottery.
Didn't we have the same 4 exact teams last year in the play-in? Orlando, Miami, I believe they were the Atlanta, same exact 4, and yeah. Chicago. And it feels like every year they're just like carved in marble that they're going to be in the play-in tournament. And for Chicago, they haven't won a championship since the Jordan years. They haven't gone to the NBA finals or deep playoff runs since the Jordan years. And I would say Miami, they've got the championships under Eric Spoelstra. They don't have the Chicago Bulls front office can't rely on, hey, we're going to be able to get free agents. We're going to be able to build championship contenders overnight. Free agents are going to come here. They just haven't been able to deliver that. So you have to kind of reevaluate who you are and what you represent. You're not the 90s Bulls anymore. And the best way to do that is to build through the draft. And enough of this hamster wheel of mediocrity of being in the middle. And so I'm with you. Choose a direction. The Chicago Bulls being in the play-in tournament every year, I don't think serves the fans. I think what they want is a bankable Derrick Rose-type talent, and they just haven't been able to get that guy because they've been, in a way, too good to go get a Derrick Rose-type at the top of the draft. So I'm with you. Those stats are hilarious, though, just that we got to find a way to trade Vooch and Smith so that they can do the right thing and be as bad as possible.
I mean, get rid of Vooch. Buy him out. He's a free agent this summer. Let him go to a contender. Doesn't even need to be a trade. Number 3 of our 5 NBA teams that must make a trade. The Spurs must add shooting. I think this team is good enough, Tom, to go for it. You got to make a swing. It's open. You get a chance to win a championship early when Wemby's still on his rookie scale contract. If I'm the Spurs, here's an idea I have for you, Tom. Cash in some of your future picks. Call up New Orleans for Trey Murphy, somebody like that, or call up the Brooklyn Nets for Michael Porter Jr. Harrison Barnes, Kelly Olynyk gets you there financially, and then multiple firsts. Maybe it's 2, maybe it's 3, maybe it's 3 in a swap. Maybe that's too much if you're a Spurs fan, you might say that. But point is, they should be exploring things like this because this team is not a good shooting team. Adding a guy like this, an MPJ, a Murphy, a Lauri Markkanen, somebody in that realm changes the whole dynamics of this roster if you have that ability. Talk about, as we said earlier, getting Wemby to the basket more often. Imagine Victor Wembanyama in a dribble handoff with Michael Porter Jr. flying around that screen, fake handoff, Wemby dribbles to the basket. Or he hands it off to MPJ, defender flies out, has to defend him off the three-point line. Wemby rolls hard, lob dunk. This is adding one shooter, gets Wemby at the basket more, and adds a new layer to your offense with that guy taking 6, 7, 8 plus three-pointers a game. Go for it if you're San Antonio. You don't have to wait for Wemby to be 27. Go for it today.
Call it in. I love this trade. You know, what you want to do as an offense is make the defense have to make decisions, right? Harrison Barnes, you're not like deliberating in your head about whether I'm going to go and defend Harrison Barnes. You're not.
No.
But in a dribble handoff where you got Michael Porter Jr. flying off of it, yeah, you're having to make decisions. You're always wanting to put the defense in a place where they have to think. And the more that a defense thinks, the more that they're going to be in trouble. That split second decision happens when you have Michael Porter Jr. on the team. It does not happen with Harrison Barnes. And at this point in his career, he's a great vet to have on the roster, but not in the role that they have him currently. I feel like they're overdue to replace Harrison Barnes on the wing because they've accelerated their trajectory way faster than a lot of people thought. I thought that they were going to have a big leap this year, but I didn't expect it to be second team in the Western Conference good. And when you're in this position and you've beat up on the Oklahoma City Thunder as much as they have, you're not just looking at this and saying, hey, we'll be happy with winning the first round. When you appear to have the Thunder's number, you put your chips into the middle and you say, the time is now. Let's go for it now. There's been a new NBA champion every year for the last 7 years. Why can't it be us when you have the Oklahoma City Thunder's number at this point? And man, wouldn't that be just kind of a crazy turn of events where the Denver Nuggets were trading Michael Porter Jr. to the Brooklyn Nets and being like, yeah, we don't have to worry about that guy, you know, in the same conference. We don't have to go against him in case he makes the star turn. What if he makes the star turn and then ends up with one of the rivals and you have to go face that team with Wemby, with De'Aaron Fox and Michael Porter Jr. in the playoffs? That would be, in a drama-filled day in the NBA, that would be a lot more fun in the Western Conference if Michael Porter Jr. went to the top of the conference there for either the Spurs or somebody else.
It would be so awesome if that were to happen. Number four of the five NBA teams that must make a trade, the Clippers. I say they must trade Ivica Zubats, Tom. I know Zubats was great last year. He's been not as great this year, but his salary this year, $18 million, 19.6 next year, 21 the year after that. Very team-friendly salary. To me, I look at this for the Clippers as a chance to recoup some picks and potentially get somebody who can help this. The Clippers just moved back into the play-in. They continue rising up the standings. I see no reason for them not to surpass your Portland Trail Blazers or the Golden State Warriors without Jimmy Butler. They can at least get to eighth. I think that's possible for the Clippers. Why not trade Zoo when you already have Brook Lopez, you have Yannick, you have a situation with your bigs with John Collins as well. You have depth. Maybe Zoo is your most tradable value asset. You could flip him to the Knicks, who could use another big, go maybe get Bridges, or trade him to the Celtics for Simons and picks, or trade him to the Pacers, who seem to be in on a bunch of bigs right now for a Mathurin type of deal. I just think exploring Zoo and putting him out there is a chance to replenish the picks and or help out your team today. And why not go for it? Make this one of those magical years. It starts off with controversy, and maybe it's the year they stay healthy. You never know. But you got to give yourself a chance.
You know, if Zubats was 35, they'd be like, we're not trading this guy. He's too young right now for the Clippers. Too young. Got to move him. 28? He's 28? Yeah. Kind of feel like he's too young for this team. Like, if you're nearing 36, 37, then you're the right guy for us. So, no, I love Zoo, and I don't want to trade him. I feel like defensively, Niederhauser's great, and we talked about him last week. But is he ready to really play like 30 minutes a night in a deep playoff run with what the Clippers want to do? Brook Lopez, at his age, can you count on him? If you're going to trade Zoo for a wing player, it's got to be an all defensive caliber guy, because Mikal Bridges has been that guy at one point in his career, but that's putting a lot on Brook Lopez and Niederhauser. So I wouldn't trade Zoo. I'm on the other side of this one. I would keep Zoo, but you're right, is that the best chance to upgrade is trading Zoo. There's not a lot of assets on this roster with the salary that you would need to get a star player or a guy who's a two-way star. It's going to be tough to get that guy without trading Zoo. So he might be the only way to do that. I just think they're stuck. I think this is the roster. And all right, I'll just say it. Do you trade Zoo for Anthony Davis? Would you want Anthony Davis on this Clippers team? Or you're just like, you know what? If I'm trading Zoo, I want to get a wing guy, not a big.
Yeah, I'm not against AD for the Clippers. It's just a matter of like, what else am I having to give financially to get to AD? What is it? Bogdanovich plus Zoo plus one more salary, I think, gets you to the 50 plus million for AD, something along those lines. That's not bad. I mean, that's an interesting idea, but I think like the Clippers make sense for AD because it's like, why not? Just, you know, it's a swing. It's a big swing. You only need him healthy for 3 months, April, May, June, and, you know, wrap him up until then, keep him healthy. But I think AD is an interesting idea. I like AD idea for the Clippers, actually.
AD going back to the Clippers, LA rivalry with the Lakers, goes back home, and then he faces the Clippers Lakers in the playoffs. Oh, that would be fun. That would be really fun. So now I'm talking myself into it, Kev. AD to the Clippers. Let's go.
Yeah. Can you imagine that leading into All-Star weekend in LA? If a couple, like a week prior, AD gets traded to the Clippers, that'd be pretty awesome if that were to happen. So that's four. We've talked so far about the four teams. We've had the Orlando Magic got to get a shooter. The Bulls got to tank, get rid of Vooch. The Spurs have to add more shooting as well. The Clippers got to trade Zubats. Those were my four so far. My fifth and final one here, Tom. The Bucks have to make a trade. The Bucks have to do something. There's been so much talk recently about, well, what are they going to do to add around Giannis? Are they going to go for a Ja Morant? Are they going to buy low on somebody? What are they going to do? They're 18-25 this season. It seems like after every single game, Giannis is saying something that makes waves. I mean, earlier the week, it was I'll take it day by day with his future with the team. After last night's game, another Bucks loss. He talked about how the team is playing selfish. He threw that word out there. Not often you hear a star player actually go that far saying the team is playing selfish. And that's in part because of his low shooting volume. 13 shots against the Wolves, 12 shots against the Spurs, 12 shots against the Hawks, and then only 11 against OKC in their loss on Wednesday. And so much of the conversation, Tom, is around Giannis and whether he's going to demand a trade or not, and maybe he will. That's very possible that Giannis just ends up demanding a trade before the deadline on February 5th. But I'd go as far to say the Bucks must trade Giannis. That's how bad it's been lately, Tom, that the Bucks are in a position where maybe they should be the one just to say, we're getting the divorce here and we're going to shop you now before this offseason when he gains more leverage. That's the risk here for the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis this summer could be an expiring salary because he has a player option for the following year. And so for Giannis, that final 26, 27 year of his salary could be the final year of his contract. That's when he's going to have more leverage to get what he wants. And maybe he'd even have a little bit of leverage now. I'm sure he would, and I'm sure they would try to do right by him. However, at the same time, Tom, you might, even if you send him to the same place in July that you would now in January or in February, there's just less time on the salary. It's another year gone from that contract. He's another year older. And so for the Bucks, if you're maximizing return, the time is right now, in my opinion, and they need to be looking at this situation and deciding we're going to be the ones to end it instead of waiting for this guy who's being so wishy-washy about it. Am I crazy to even suggest this, that the Bucks should be the ones to end this relationship here?
You're not crazy, and I think this has the potential to get really messy. Like Giannis, the way that he, you know, did the double thumbs down, the booing last week. And then, you know, you can say, hey, the fans weren't booing Giannis. They were booing the team. And it was a collective boo rather than directed directly at Giannis. But the comments that increasingly seem to point the finger at his teammates, Kevin Porter Jr. is injured with an oblique injury. Now you're going to see him out for a while. I feel like we're spinning. We're spiraling for the Milwaukee Bucks. They're not getting any closer to the play-in, which is the Chicago Bulls Invitational. The Milwaukee Bucks are not getting that invite. And I feel like right now, it seems like Giannis, as we talk about every week, it's the most obvious thing is that we're headed to a divorce here because of all of the comments that he's had and the futility of the Milwaukee Bucks. It's almost as obvious as saying, everybody poops. That's how obvious this is that they need to get a divorce here, Kev. It feels like to me, Kev, that we're already here. Everyone needs to acknowledge it, that we're already at this point where they're going to be headed to a divorce. This is a supporting cast that I have said is the most god-awful supporting cast for a MVP caliber player in Giannis. You look at the supporting cast for Jokic. You look at the supporting cast for Luka, for SGA. Miles, miles better than what you're seeing for Milwaukee around Giannis. And part of that is their own doing. Look, they did not decide to pull the cord, the rip cord when Damian Lillard went down. They decided, you know what, we're going to keep trying to build around Giannis. But I mean, this just seems like inevitable that we're headed for a divorce here. And I think, man, it seems 2 weeks away, this trade deadline. There's a lot of games left for Giannis to say some stuff. And we're headed to that point where they might just say, this is getting messy. And before it gets too messy, we'll just decide, we've heard you loud and clear, Giannis. We're not at a point where we can deliver a title contending team. They're not even in the freaking play-in picture right now. We're so delusional about what the Milwaukee Bucks can be. It's nuts to me. I think it's headed for a divorce, and we just might as well rip the Band-Aid off now.
I got one fake trade for you to end off the podcast, involving Giannis going to the Golden State Warriors. We'll wrap it back to where we began talking about Golden State Warriors, three-way deal with involving your Portland Trail Blazers. Warriors get Giannis, Jeremy Grant, Gary Trent, and Thanasis Antetokounmpo. Bucks get Jimmy Butler, Buddy Hield, Trayce Jackson-Davis, every Warriors first and swap, one Blazers first. Blazers get Kuminga and Horford salary filler. And the reason why the Blazers give up a pick here can be a lower end one as well is because Kuminga's he's so young. Many moons ago, Mike Schmitz, now the assistant GM of the Portland Trail Blazers, said Kuminga could be the steal of the draft. He also had said in the year prior to that, Denny Avdija could be the steal of the draft. What's one of the first guys they went to go acquire? Denny Avdija. I have reported that Portland is one of the teams that has interest in Kuminga. So I think giving up a first with older Jeremy Grant is a reasonable thing to do. And you send that to the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't think the Bucks could potentially do any better than this type of deal. And I'm sure some Warriors fans will be like, no, we're not giving up every first and every swap. Well, if you have a roster with Stephen Curry and Draymond Green and Giannis Antetokounmpo and Jeremy Grant and Gary Trent and Brandon Podziemski and Quentin Post and so on and so forth, that's a championship contending roster today. And when you're only three games back from the four seed, and for the Bucks, you get a ton of high value future picks for Giannis and some early cap flexibility with Butler and Hield expiring after next season. And the Blazers get a young guy in Kuminga. Give him a shot, and maybe it works out there, and he blossoms like Denny has. I love this deal for all three teams, but I'm biased because I'm the one who made it up.
Yeah, well, if you think that the Warriors can get Giannis with just the salary filler of Jimmy Butler, man, that would be a heist. That would be a heist if the Warriors can pull that off and get a guy who can step in right away and Jeremy Grant and provide that offensive lift that they sorely need without Jimmy Butler in uniform. So this, I mean, if the Warriors can get Giannis, Mike Dunleavy should have his jersey retired up on the rafters at Chase Center, because if he can get Giannis without giving up really anything of substantial value in that trade because Jimmy Butler is expiring deal next year. Wow. That's all I got to say. Kev, I don't think that they can do it. The Warriors can pull it off, but given that they bring in a third team, they're going to probably have to get in a third team to get some more assets going Milwaukee's way. But do you think that the Bucks? I mean, you said it. How can you get much better than that? There's not a young player in there that you feel confident about that you can build around. I feel like the Bucks got to get that young player rather than just Jimmy Butler, right?
You know, I think it's who's doing.
You're just saying it's a reset, like a complete reset.
Well, I mean, who's giving up that young player with the picks? Like, where is that team? Is OKC a team? No. Is San Antonio or Houston? Maybe they would. Maybe you do get a Dylan Harper or a Stephon Castle from San Antonio. Maybe they wouldn't end up doing that, especially after recent weeks in which Harper has really struggled. Maybe they would decide, you know what? We will do it. We will decide to do this. Maybe. But I don't think there's any guarantee that that package is out there. And that's Houston? Where I think, well, like Amen Thompson,
mm-hmm. Jabari Smith, Amen Thompson, Reed Shepard. There's going to be young players Jabari that they can put
Smith
into.
He doesn't move me. Jabari Smith doesn't move me. He's a very mid player.
Mm. I just feel like there's got to be a better package, and maybe that's the reason why they haven't traded Giannis or pushed that button is because the teams that you would think are putting those young players onto the table are not actually. Maybe. So maybe that's the reason why we haven't seen it. But that would be a crazy trade. Is that the Warriors getting Giannis? That would be wild.
Thing is, Tom. I mean, Giannis, like, he's 31. He'll be 32 next year. He doesn't have a lot of time left on his contract. He's been very difficult to deal with in recent years with some of the demands of the roster and the coaching staff. It hasn't all been good ever since they won a championship with Giannis. And also, like, everybody talks about how bad the supporting cast is and how bad the effort is on the team. Giannis's effort has been piss poor as well. He is not without blame for some of the difficulties of this team, not to mention the poor leadership aspect. This guy is like, will he, won't he, all year long, never has done anything definitive to suppress that conversation and how it can affect the team. And so Giannis is an unbelievable player, but he's also very hard just from a pure basketball fit to install into a team. Like, he's a tough guy. And so I think ultimately for the Bucks, if the Warriors, if they were to even want to put in all their future picks, and that would go against everything Golden State has been talking about, how they view what they're going to do, that might be the best by far that you can do. So if I'm the Bucks, I'm very open to just moving Giannis regardless of his wishes the remainder of this season. Because it could get even uglier, Tom, and that leverage you have could decline even further.
Keep your third eye open on this. Stephen Curry and Giannis Antetokounmpo share an agency in Octagon. So they're always close. They've always been close at All-Star. And it would be a shocker if they were able to, Warriors were able to pull this off. And, you know, Jimmy Butler, healthy Jimmy Butler, I don't think Milwaukee does this. It just doesn't make sense in my head. 100%. But when Jimmy Butler gets hurt, it's almost like this deal makes more sense in my head, which is so crazy to me.
100%. I mean, Michael in the chat said, why would the Bucks want 37-year-old Jimmy Butler coming back after a torn ACL? That's exactly why they would want him, because he's out and he doesn't need to be around the team. If he is healthy, you wouldn't want Jimmy Butler in a losing situation. But he's away, you do want him. And then maybe next year you trade him as an expiring salary. Maybe even buy him out. I mean, who knows what the situation would be a year from now. That's why you do it. The deal is for the picks, not for Jimmy Butler. But Tom, we covered a lot today, man. There's so much going on around the NBA right now, on the court, off the court. We have a couple weeks till the trade deadline. Lots for us to discuss. Thank you so much for joining me today, Tom.
Yeah, and everyone, make sure you smash that subscribe button to Yahoo NBA YouTube. You can catch the big number, which we recorded yesterday with a lot of the similar stuff on the Warriors with Dan Devine and the Dunker Spot. Everybody, subscribe. We'd really appreciate it, and thank you for watching. Back next week.
Yes, definitely. Please subscribe to Yahoo NBA. That's where you can find all of our podcasts. I have a video coming up, hopefully this week, talking about the Warriors situation as well. So subscribe to Yahoo NBA for our new YouTube channel. Give us a like as well. It really does help us out. The audio version of the podcast, I'm going to have a conversation with Tyler Rucker from No Ceilings, breaking down the NBA draft. That's coming up next. All right, it's time for Draft Class. Joining me today from No Ceilings, Tyler Rucker. Tyler, how are you today, man?
Kevin, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk some hoops with you.
I'm excited to have you on as well. I mean, you guys do amazing work at No Ceilings, covering the draft literally every single day with your awesome, enthusiastic, and educational coverage as well. So I want to talk with you about some college players and also do a little NBA rookie check-in later on. I want to start off with a lottery lesson. An update on Nate Amendt out of Tennessee, because it feels like every time we talk about Amendt on the podcast, it's never good. And I think with Amendt at this point, there's no reason that it is good. It's still not good with Nate Amendt, Tyler. What's behind the challenges he's faced this year with Tennessee, and has there been any signs of life that you've seen as of late?
Yeah, I think it was tough coming into the year with Nate because, you know, Kevin, as good as anyone, like there's always just some name that's hyped as being one of the top guys in each draft class that might just struggle a little bit out of the gate and fail to live up to preseason expectations. And with Nate, you know, there's a lot of fun tools on paper, you know, a 6'10", 200 plus pound, you know, forward that is billed as a floor spacer. But just this year at Tennessee, you see a lot of struggles when it comes to, you know, creating space, finishing a lot. You know, he is getting to the free throw line a lot, which is a good sign, but the outside shot just hasn't been there. So it's kind of tough when you're being sold on the idea of someone of being like, hey, he's going to be this gigantic floor spacer. And, you know, he's been flirting around 25-30% all year from deep. So I think with Nate, you're starting to see a little bit of confidence develop right now, but there's still a lot of questions right now of like, hey, where's this range going to be when it comes to, you know, the draft, and where do scouts feel comfortable with him?
I mean, and ultimately this year, he's also still not shooting well at the rim. He's shooting 45% at the rim in the half court. And for a guy his size, that needs to further improve. He's only 42% for that matter on just layups in the half court. And so if he's not shooting the ball well, and if he's not creating enough off the dribble, and if he's not finishing when he is at the basket, what do you actually have with Nate Amendt? And like, I think you can squint and see the glimmers of what you hope he can be. But to me, like, it's still, I feel even more certain now talking about him in the middle of January than I did, I think, last time on the show, early December. He's got to go back to school. Like, why would he declare in this year's draft class?
Yeah, it's kind of the same feeling, I think, when you watch the tape and you kind of look at where he started the year with some buzz around the draft scouting world and now where he's at. I think you just kind of get to a point where you're like, well, why would he declare this year? Why wouldn't he go back and further, you know, fill out his frame? There's reports that he gained around 20 pounds since getting onto campus, which is great, but you're still, as you mentioned, like you're still seeing he's struggling as a finisher. He's really struggling to put the ball in the basket at 6'10", which is a big enough red flag as it is. And then the outside shooting isn't there. So it's like, well, how is this going to contribute to immediate success at the next level when guys are bigger, guys are tougher? So it's I'm right there too. I see a guy that could do wonders if he just was like, hey, let me get another year under my belt, let really work on my frame and my game, get a little bit quicker. I think it could do wonders, especially next year's class is not as deep as this one. So he could really do some good for him to go back and, you know, maybe he's going to be a top five pick next year. We'll see.
I mean, I'm hopeful. I mean, I still think there's an opportunity for him next year if he's able to, as you said, fill out, improve his game. He could just be one of those year two guys. I mean, it's just the reality of it. Like, not everybody has to be a one and done. He can still make some money through NIL next year at Tennessee and set himself up for better success in the NBA. So I'm hopeful there. And I would anticipate another guy that people thought could potentially be in the lottery, Elijah Arenas. You know, obviously this offseason he was in a serious car accident. He suffered a torn meniscus as well over the offseason in July. He was put into a coma at one point. Elijah Arenas, son of Gilbert Arenas. He did make his college debut on Wednesday against Northwestern. It was not a great game statistically for him. 3 for 15 in the game, only 2 for 6 from the free throw line. He finished with 8 points in the game. What did you see from this game, Tyler? And like, I think really more importantly, what are you going to be looking for in his games to come this season?
Yeah, it's just unbelievable story for, you know, kind of what Elijah's dealt with, and already being back on the basketball court just speaks to, you know, his determination and everything. So most importantly, it's awesome to see him back out there. But, you know, it's awesome, but it was also like, hey, let's be realistic about his first couple games back. He's going to be a little rusty. And I saw that last night. You see the explosiveness. You know, he's 6'6", 5-star recruit. Really talented scorer, like obviously his old man was. You can see the explosiveness, the handles and everything. But I think last night when you're watching the tape, you just kind of see a couple plays where you're like, all right, the timing's just got to come back a little bit. He's like a half step a little early or anxious on some of his drives. Look, it's an ugly box score. I think, as you said, he's 3 for 15, but you see a couple shots, you're like, all right, a couple of those bounce a different way, and we might look at something and be like, this wasn't too bad. But I, you know, with Elijah, he's this microwave scorer that I think scouts are still really excited about for as a wild card this year. But it's one of those things where, like, I think he's got a lot of gifts as a playmaker. And if he could just figure out that balance to let the offense kind of open up with the scoring, I think that's where he could really start cooking. But last night he looked a little over anxious or excited sometimes when he's trying to create for himself, but looked like he was, you know, playing his more speed when it was setting up other teammates. So just letting the game slow down for a bit. And I think that's what's going to happen in the first couple of games. It's just like, hey, let's just see when he gets his feet wet, let's see how he adjusts.
Absolutely. I mean, 100%. I think with a guy like him, you're going to be patient, especially with the way 2025 went for him. It would be outrageous to be like, Elijah Arenas looks like a boss, only 3 for 15. He's not. It's like, relax. Nobody's saying that. I mean, I think with Arenas, you give him time and hopefully he's able to have some big games for USC by the end of the year. And it's not a lot of turnaround time, though. I mean, coming back in the middle of January, Tyler, it wouldn't shock me at all if it's just more struggles. And he's a guy where it's very clearly he should go back to school. It'd almost be kind of a shocker if he starts having big games. I think it would be pretty telling about him if he starts having big games considering everything he went through.
Yeah, I you know, I'm never ever rooting for guys to just be like, they got to go back automatically. But I'm with you. It's like for everything he went through, you would think just today's day and age with the NIL, it's like it's so much good to just go back and be patient and prove on your game. But he's an absolute wild card in this class now. That is a class that is a lot of depth, a lot of excitement. And, you know, all of a sudden we inject Elijah Arenas in the mold and you get a 6'6 bucket getter. So I think once he gets his feet wet, it's all of a sudden we're going to look up and be like, whoa, he had a big, big night tonight. It's just, can he consistently have those? And it's tough. As you said, Kevin, it's tough kind of coming back, you know, middle of January, end of January, and being like, all right, you got a limited amount of time to make some noise. But I still think he's drawn enough attention before this year that scouts just might still be intrigued. But we'll see. There's always some curveballs when it comes to that, the withdrawal deadline, and maybe Elijah's going to be in the mix. We never know.
Yep, you never do know there. Let's move on to our weekly movers, where we talk about players. Their stock is up, stock is down. Who's a guy that's inching up your board in recent weeks, Tyler?
You know, for me, it's been Illinois freshman Keaton Wagler, who's, you know, one of these players that's kind of every year, I think we get a name that's all of a sudden just skyrocketing up boards. You know, a couple of years ago, we had Bub Carrington, where it was like, who's this guy coming out of nowhere? And Wagler's kind of taking that crown right now. He's 6'6", he's shifty, good feel for the game, plays at his speed. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. Illinois just had Kylan Boswell is going to be out for some time. So they need someone to kind of take over the reins and run the show. And I think Wagler's going to be the name that if he could really put forth some solid stretches, which he's been doing this year, I think that's going to only excite scouts more. So he's still 18 years old. He's young. And this is a guy, I think he had like one or two like major offers. I think Minnesota might have been the only other school that offered him. So was not expecting this type of year from him, but he's been tremendous. Just a smart player this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very fun player. I was you know, watching his game against Rutgers a couple weeks back or earlier this month, and it's like, not just like, he's 6'6". He's not just a shooter, but the creation ability he shows as well. He had like this play where he's kind of like backing down from the 3-point line, turned his back and started backing into the rim, and just the ability to take shots off the dribble, some of the creativity, the quirkiness to his game as well. Where is he on your board? Is he a lottery guy? Has he shown enough already, or is he more like a mid late first in your opinion?
Yeah, I have him in my lottery right now. It's one of those things where each time I watch him, I'm like, man, I know NBA teams love positional versatility with that size, and he just seems, he plays poised. He plays like he's been in college for a couple of years, and I think the floor spacing, the playmaking, he doesn't rush the issue too much when it comes to trying to create. If it's not there, he's like, all right, let's move the ball, let's swing. Mm-hmm. He just seems like a player that also NBA teams are going to be like, oh man, this is what we want. This looks like a guy that could play a really long time. Offensively, and I'm saying offensively, he reminds me of Derek White. The defense is not there, but you know, there's just a lot of, you know, parts of his game where you're like, man. Yeah, it's just one of those vibes.
Because White in San Antonio did some of that stuff. He played more. I mean, this year in Boston, White's role is up. But like in San Antonio, he ran a lot heavier dose of pick and roll. And he could do some things, plug and play into different spots on the floor. And that's what I mean with him. It's like he, you know, he could go back to the basket sometimes. Like, he's got a very quirky game. He's not just a traditional 3-and-D, 6'6" guy. His handle adds a new element.
Yeah, and look, he's in the, you brought up the pick and roll with White in San Antonio. Wagler's in the 94th percentile with synergy when it comes to pick and roll, you know, situations. So he's smart. He plays his speed, and he's also just someone that doesn't force the issue a ton. The athleticism isn't there, but he makes up for it a lot when it comes to, you know, like, all right, let me just, I don't need to try to force this. Let's just keep it moving. And just seems like a plug and play type of guy that you put in alongside what you got already as a team, and you're like, okay, this one's going to be good for a long time. So Wagler's one that I think has slowly kept creeping up, and then all of a sudden he's putting together these stretches where you're like, oh man, like how high can we get? So he's going to be a fun one looking forward.
What's a college game that you're looking forward to watching over these next couple of days or this next week from a scouting perspective?
Oh man, there's so many good ones coming up. Houston, Texas Tech is going to be a big one, and then
it's like asking somebody, "What's your favorite song?" It's like, oh, how am I supposed to choose just one? It's just too many.
Exactly. It's just that time of the year, and I think it's just the buzz with this draft class, and there's so much just talent near the top, even in the lottery, and then there's depth. So I think every game now, you're like, goodness, here we go. But Houston, Texas Tech is going to be a fun one. Kingston Fleming's going against Christian Anderson, who's been red hot for the Red Raiders.
So good.
And then next week we get BYU at Arizona, or excuse me, Arizona at BYU. So AJ DeBanza, and then, you know, down the road, Kevin, I'm eyeing the Darren Peterson, AJ DeBanza, which is next Saturday. So hopefully Darren's healthy. That's what I've been saying all year, but there's a lot of fun matchups coming up. So it's going to be a fun time of the cycle to get caught up. If you haven't, if you're an NBA fan.
100%. I mean, I think that now is the time to really start tuning in. No, I mean, it's been fun covering the draft since November. Since week one, we've been doing a weekly draft class segment. And I feel like people have really enjoyed the draft coverage early on because, and you know this with no ceilings, Tyler, especially with a good quality draft class, interest is always up. I think there's so many fans. It's always the idea of what could be. Know, what's entering the league? How could this guy help our team? And there's a lot this year. I mean, you mentioned Kingston Flemings, who has worked himself into potentially that top five conversation. I am curious, you mentioned Anderson on Texas Tech and of course, Kingston Flemings on Houston. What's your thought on the role of like some of these smaller guards in the NBA nowadays? I mean, we talked about this a bit last week with my guests, but I am curious to ask you about that same topic as well, because this is a very guard-heavy draft class. So what are your thoughts on that and the need for guards in the NBA, the place for small guards?
I think it's kind of been something I've been waiting to see if it almost goes back to the previous years where it was like, okay, well, teams now are like, hey, we need more guards. Let's just invest in, you know, maybe the undersized guys. Because we just seen recent draft history, it doesn't happen often. Teams are always wanting size. They're wanting these plus size ball handlers. But this draft class is stacked with, you know, what's your flavor of preference when it comes to like going to an ice cream shop? It's like you can find it when it comes to guards in this class. So I think that's this so year's going to. It's just like it's any like pick your poison this year. You can find whatever you're looking for. But you know, it's you know this, Kevin, like the NBA is a copycat league. And I thought that the finals with the Pacers and the Thunder was a big, you know, ring in the hey, you need to get depth now. You need to be like able to run out different lineups and variations. So I think there's gonna be teams looking at me like, let's just add another guard. Let's get some depth, let's get some variety because injuries happen throughout the year or guys can play alongside. So I think this is a fantastic class to just keep building. And you know, Kingston Fleming's has been great. Christian Anderson's on fire right now. So you're getting these guys that are starting to really come into their own as playmakers, as scorers. And then all of a sudden you look at this class and you're like, okay, there's like four or five other ones of those. Like, so it's a fun year to look at that. And I think it's going to be really interesting from a roster construction, like building perspective. I think some of these teams might be like, we have a couple guards, but let's get another because best player are on our board and depth is more important than ever right now in the league.
Well, I think, you know, obviously there's difficulties with small guards adjusting to the NBA, but they can still make a positive impact. And I thought for an NBA rookie check-in here earlier in the week, the Rockets had a big win against the San Antonio Spurs. And Reed Sheppard, he looked like the college version of himself in that game. He had 21 points, 4 of 10 from the field, and he had an awesome block on the corner against Champagne, where he just blocked the three-pointer just like he did in college many, many times. Clutch blocks late in games on three-pointers, on jump shots. This little guy that with his ability and his feel as a shot blocker on top of the playmaking and the shooting and the scoring, Sheppard is looking like the right pick for Houston. I had him number one on my board. We'll see in time if that was the right choice or not, but I just think I feel very vindicated with my opinion of Reed Sheppard with the way he's played as of late this year. What have you seen from Reed, Tyler?
It's starting to look like things are slowing down. And This is looking like the Reed Sheppard from Kentucky. You know, you asked about small guards. I think you got to be able to shoot it. So with Reed, it wasn't like, hey, he's never going to figure it out. Cause I was like, he could shoot it, but I think he's just got to figure out his style and get to his spots and not rush it too much. So I'm the most patient with young guards in the NBA because I understand how hard it is with that, you know, learning curve. But all of a sudden when it looks like the game's slower, you're like, uh-oh, here we go. And I think you're starting to see that with Reed. It's like, well, he could shoot it, but now he's figuring out the ways to get to his shot and not be forcing it or anything. Cause I still remember beginning of the year, everyone was freaking out about the OKC game to start out. And I was like, give him some time. It's a tough start to the year for an inexperienced guard. But you know, looking at some of these last games he's been playing, like I'm like, oh, there's the Kentucky, there's the prospect Reed Sheppard that we've been waiting to see. So I still think it was a great pick from Houston, and I think it's
gonna is that a real photo on screen? You see that photo? He just looks
come on,
is that a real picture? Looks incredible.
Photoshopped.
There's no way that's a real picture. It looks like he literally just lifted. There's no way that's real.
But right. there's no way.
Right? Do you agree?
Yeah, I completely agree. There's no chance. That has to be post-edited. I knew he was stocky at Kentucky, but no way. Okay, that's why he's looked good, Kevin, because he just, you know, gained 20 pounds of muscle. But look, I think this is right what you want to see if you're a Rockets fan. Like, Reed's right on schedule. He's building some confidence and things are slowing down. So now I can't get that photo out of my head. That's ridiculous.
Was that real?
are we being punked?
Oh my god! I don't know. For the audio listeners not watching us on YouTube, it looks like Reed is just like a bodybuilder in this photo. The neck it looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Reed Sheppard.
Goodness, it looks like he's trying to be Thor.
Yeah. Oh my god, that might be real. I think it's real.
It's scary if it's real. See, this is the problem. Now I'm gonna, after the pod, go look up, like, is Reed Shepard just like gaining all this muscle? That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, also with AI nowadays, you don't know what's real or what's not, because it's so convincing at this point. Remember a few years ago with the Will Smith spaghetti thing, and it's like, oh yeah, this is some BS. It's never gonna be anything. And nowadays, it's like, well, type in Will Smith eating spaghetti, and you get a video of Will Smith eating spaghetti. Except it's not real.
So ridiculous. It's true, because every time I'm looking at a photo these days, I'm like, is it real? And that's the first thing you say, real and fake?
That's a big problem. That's a big problem. I saw a Wob, who, you know, obviously very popular on NBA Twitter. He posted saying, like, I haven't seen a Sora video in the last couple of weeks on Instagram Reels. And I'm like, how do you know?
Yeah.
How do you know? You just didn't know it.
Good point, though. Right? But yeah, how do you know?
How do you know? I don't know. It's very, very challenging nowadays. But I do think, like, with all the fake stuff out there, people are going to seek out real content with real personalities. I think that's always going to have an edge. And ultimately, that's one of the things people love about No Ceilings. I mean, you guys have developed a group of passionate people who love the draft and love talking about the draft, all very likable people. Where'd the idea come from, Tyler? Like, what was the motivation behind putting together No Ceilings?
Yeah, it was just, you know, kind of, we were all working the draft grind solo, and talked to Corey Tolba one off season. I think after Summer League, I got this crazy idea about, you know, hey, I want to start a draft website and, you know, make a run at, you know, making it something legit that we can shed light on, not just the guys that are going top 10, but, you know, guys that are going undrafted, give them some spotlight. Like, every prospect deserves, you know, full attention. So, brought it to Corey Tolba, like, terrified he was going to say no and be like, come on, man, that's crazy. And he was like, I'm all in, let's do it. And Albert Gim was with them. And then all of a sudden it's blossomed to this team of really hard workers and guys that, you know, are really passionate and care about their grind and care about their work. So it's been awesome to connect with the, you know, NBA world and people like yourself, Kevin. It's been great for the support over the years. So we appreciate it as always.
I mean, Tyler, you guys do amazing work. Everybody go check out No Ceilings NBA and Tyler Rucker as well with your podcast and all your content. You're always posting on social media and sharing your insights on the draft. Thank you so much for sharing some of those today on the show, Tyler.
Thanks for having me, Kev. Appreciate it.
Big thank you to Tom Havisher and Tyler Rucker for joining me on today's episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Thank you to Emmy and the whole team for producing today's show. Thanks to Father John Misty for the music. Hope you enjoyed giving us a listen. We'll be back again on Monday.